Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Understanding Girls with ADHD, How They Feel, and Why They Do What They Do, by Kathleen G. Nadeau, Ph.D., Ellen B. Littman, Ph.D., and Patricia O'Quinn, M.D., narrated by Carly Robbins. Foreword. It was not all that long ago, in retrospect, that clinicians and scientists alike believed that ADHD existed largely, if not exclusively, in boys. Despite the surge of information on girls and women with ADHD that currently exists, the history of neglect of females with ADHD is a dispiriting legacy to overcome. As a graduate student and young investigator in the field back in the 1970s and 1980s, I came to believe myself that the study of ADHD was one and the same as the study of boys and men with ADHD. But I was plagued by the sense that the field's information was incomplete. How could ADHD skip girls altogether? By the early 1990s, the National Institutes of Health had begun to issue guidelines relevant to the study of a wide range of medical diseases and issues in both men and women. For scientific and political reasons, I began to take up the call. Thus, 20 years ago, I prepared a major grant application for the National Institute of Mental Health. In this document, my team and I proposed utilizing the summer camp methodologies we had deployed for boys with ADHD to investigate a large sample of girls whom we considered to be grossly underrepresented in the existing research literature. Although the field was beginning to believe that girls could experience ADHD, their numbers in scientific papers were small and conclusions fairly speculative. Interest was clearly growing, but there were not the kinds of data on A. Girls with ADHD in naturalistic settings, e.g. summer camps, in which information on academic performance, social behavior, cognitive processing, family interactions, and self-perceptions could be synthesized, or B. Long-term follow-up into adolescence and adulthood with respect to developmental trajectories and lifelong patterns of symptoms, impairments, and resilience. The grant proposal struck a chord. It received an unprecedentedly strong priority score in 1995. Indeed, the review panel commented on the need, expressed in the application, for not just gender comparison studies, i.e., those directly comparing males and females, but investigations of girls with ADHD in their own right, in the context of all female contexts. As a result, our team began preparing recruitment of participants for each of three consecutive summer programs, which were held in 1997, 1998, and 1999. Despite our apprehension that we would not be able to find a viable sample, once we had advertised and discussed the planned programs with physicians, mental health centers, a range of clinicians, and schools in the Bay Area, the telephone began to ring off the hook. From more than 1,200 inquiries, we applied rigorous selection criteria and, after a multi-gated screening and assessment battery that spanned multiple hours of contact with parents, teachers, and the girls themselves, ended up with a sample of 140 girls with ADHD and an age and ethnicity matched comparison sample of 88 girls without ADHD. We began with selection criteria that allowed a wide net, but, in the end, insisted that the sample meet full diagnostic criteria for ADHD, the same as exist for males. This all-female, elementary school-aged sample was ethnically and socially economically diverse, comprising both the combined type of ADHD, i.e. girls with high levels of both inattention and impulsivity slash hyperactivity, and the inattentive type of ADHD, i.e. girls with purer inattention and disorganization. After their participation in our intensive, ecologically valid summer programs, which prioritized multi-informant and multi-method evaluations of as many aspects of their lives as we could feasibly assess, we began publishing findings regarding their behavior and performance across a wide array of domains. With these initial publications, we extended the meta-analytic findings of this period that were synthesizing data on existing female samples, demonstrating the clear academic, social, neuropsychological, and family-related deficits of our sample. Along with reports on other female samples, these data portrayed in stark terms the high levels of impairment related to female manifestations of ADHD. That is, girls with ADHD suffer in the same ways as do boys, with even greater chances of being rejected by peers and of showing deficits in math and executive functioning. Prior to the initial programs, I had let all families know that our intention, continued funding willing, was to follow their daughters for the rest of their lives. With additional grant support, we therefore embarked on a prospective follow-up during adolescence, and via another grant, a second follow-up during their early years of adulthood. Because of our relentless tracking and monitoring of the sample, because of the close relationships we had formed during the programs, and because of our creative use of social media, e.g. Facebook, we evaluated 92% of the sample at an average age of 14 for our 5-year follow-up, and 95% of the sample at an average age of 20 for our 10-year follow-up, with a 15-year follow-up now in progress. Once the latter is completed, we will have thorough information through the age span of the mid-20s. As an example of the importance of considering female-specific manifestations of development, and as a sobering reminder of the devastating impairments that can accrue from a history of ADHD, I emphasize key findings. At our adolescent follow-up, we found evidence for significant and often large impairments in the ADHD sample within each of the 11 domains we assessed, spanning academics, peer relationships, comorbidities, global impairment, self-perceptions, and family functioning. Math performance remained strikingly low, as did performance on tests of executive functioning. In addition, only a depressingly small number of the ADHD sample was, at this time, showing positive/resilient functioning in adolescence. In short, by the teen years, ADHD-related impairments were, if anything, stronger than they were in childhood, even though for many participants, some of the initial ADHD symptoms were being shed. 5 years later, by early adulthood, similar impairments persisted. In addition, we found that executive functions, measured during childhood, were especially important predictors of functional impairment. Furthermore, and crucially, we assessed additional domains of functioning linked to the young adult developmental level of the participants, including the area of self-harm. Note that it is essential in longitudinal research to A, use parallel measures to those from earlier data waves whenever possible to reveal patterns of change over time without confounding old scales with new scales, but at the same time to B, add developmentally relevant measures to supplement those utilized previously. Here, findings were particularly devastating. In general, we had found that girls initially diagnosed with the inattentive form of ADHD were as likely to show impairment later on as those with the combined form. Yet for the group of girls who had displayed not only inattention, but high levels of impulsivity during childhood, i.e. the combined type, their risk for serious suicide attempts was nearly 23% by young adulthood, far higher than for the purely inattentive and comparison groups, and their rates of moderate to severe non-suicidal self-injurious behavior were over 50%. Again, much higher than for the other subgroups. In short, girls with ADHD were at risk for high levels of self-destructive actions across the lifespan, far more than boys. The lasting legacy of early problems with impulsivity, particularly during the already difficult transition to adolescence experienced by girls in general, portends a pattern of internalizing behavior and self-harm in girls with ADHD at levels far beyond those experienced by boys. Moreover, aggressive behavior and poor response inhibition during adolescence explained the risk for non-suicidal self-injury in our sample, whereas anxiety and depression during adolescence were mediators of the long-term risk for suicide attempts. In addition, rates of early trauma, including physical abuse, sexual abuse, and neglect, were particularly predictive of the sample's risk for suicidal behavior. There are several morals to this story. First, when ADHD exists in girls, the long-term consequences are devastating and, in key respects, different from those of boys. For girls, impulsivity and its consequences predict levels of self-destruction not seen in male samples, bespeaking the urgent need for debunking the still persistent myths that ADHD does not really exist in females or is not of much real importance in girls and women. Second, clinicians and research investigators alike must pay careful attention to the growing number of girls and women with ADHD, demanding careful evaluations to avoid potential problems of rampant overdiagnosis, and emphasizing gender-specific manifestations, pathways, and impairments. Third, accessible, sensitive, and clinically relevant information on girls and women with ADHD must be available to those from all walks of life. It is here where the new edition of Understanding Girls with ADHD comes to the fore. In this expanded and updated book, Kathleen Nadeau, Ellen Littman, and Patricia Quinn rise to the occasion and deliver a comprehensive, up-to-date, and readable book that illuminates the complexity of ADHD in girls and women, both across the lifespan and across multiple domains of life, e.g., home, school, the workplace, close relationships. Blending clinical examples, case material, and a masterful synthesis of research findings around the world, the authors reveal the roots of ADHD in females during the preschool years, also summarizing relevant causal factors, and display the highly individualized journeys through childhood, adolescence, and adulthood that these girls and women face. The book's latter chapters make use of the information on ADHD and development and provide a synthesis of the kinds of treatment strategies needed to intervene with the complex issues faced by girls and families who struggle with ADHD. The authors working through the executive functioning deficits experienced by so many girls with ADHD and their deployment of vivid examples of right versus wrong ways of approaching such problems will be of great importance for large numbers of families. Even more, the authors emphasize that ADHD rarely exists in a vacuum, and that understanding and treating comorbid disorders is essential. Understanding Girls with ADHD does not shy away from key areas of controversy. How, for example, can a family know whether it's ADHD or another set of problems that's the primary issue? How does one deal with the potential use of medication, which is plagued by bad press and abundant myths, but which can, as part of a multifaceted treatment plan, provide great benefit if the right dose is found and if the doctor works with the family to monitor positive effects and side effects carefully? What about long-term risk of eating pathology, substance abuse, and other difficult areas of impairment of salience for girls? How can girls and their families break through the thicket of negative expectations and sometimes toxic family interactions to pave the way for a different set of outcomes? Clearly, ADHD does not look the same across different individuals, especially girls. Understanding girls with ADHD emphasizes the multiple ways in which ADHD can manifest itself across different people, families, and ages. Always sensitive, and without hesitation in providing an authoritative tone, this book will empower girls and their families in ways that are sorely needed. Its emphasis on gender-specific manifestations of ADHD and its inclusion of practical means of attacking the executive function deficits that plague girls and women with ADHD will ensure its continued status as a core guidebook. Written with compassion and sensitivity, and full of the clinical wisdom that accompanies years of experience on the front lines, Understanding Girls with ADHD is the go-to book for those needing guidance, support, and knowledge about female manifestations of ADHD. Given my own work related to developmental psychopathology in general, and ADHD in particular, including recognition of the still prevalent stigma that clings to many forms of mental disorder, I welcome this edition as a means of providing clarity, enlightenment, and guidance to the millions of girls and their families who can and will benefit from its sage words. ADHD is too often the source of real impairment rather than an inevitable hidden gift. Still, as the book makes abundantly clear, there is no need to perpetuate blame, shame, and stigma. Instead, empowerment, knowledge, support, and evidence-based treatments are what every family needs. Stephen P. Hinshaw, Ph.D., University of California, Berkeley, 2014. Chapter 1. We've come a long way, but there's still far to go. A few short decades ago, there was no such thing as a girl with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Although it existed in girls, it went unrecognized and was called by many other names. A girl may have been labeled a tomboy with skinned knees, and everyone hoped she'd settle down and outgrow it. Or maybe she was a sweet, shy daydreamer. "We're not worried," her parent might have said. "She'll find a good husband to take care of her." Maybe she was seen as a social butterfly, always getting in trouble for talking in class. "She's a smart girl, she's just not applying herself," a teacher would remark. Perhaps she was fiery and argumentative, rejecting her mother's admonitions to be more ladylike. Parents and teachers had their excuses and opinions, but what was it like for the girls with ADHD? How did they feel? What is ADHD like for girls? The following poignant lament eloquently expresses the experience of one of the countless girls with ADHD who grew up before ADHD was recognized in girls. "I wish my mother had known," was written in the mid-1990s by a recently diagnosed middle-aged woman, one of the sweet, shy daydreamers. At the time this poem was written, women with ADHD were taking the initiative to seek diagnosis, while most girls still languished in the classroom, overlooked and misunderstood, suffering silently. "I Wish My Mother Had Known," by Mary H. "I wish my mother had known that I was actually very smart. I wish my mother had known that I needed more attention. I wish my mother had known that I went to school every day as a little girl, in fear and dread, at the prospect of being shamed and humiliated in class. I wish my mother had known that my low self-esteem and lack of physical affection at home would lead to rampant promiscuity. I wish my mother had known that someday I would have to compete in the world, and that being married was not going to make me safe. I wish my mother had known how desperately I needed stimulation and attainable challenges. Expectations for me were very low, so even I was surprised when I realized that I love a challenge. I wish my mother had known that I was too sensitive and shy and embarrassed to have my needs met. I wish my mother had known that I could not easily either fall asleep or wake up, and that I had no control over that. I wish my mother had known that being put into the dumb classes, in spite of my consistently high IQ tests, was humiliating and caused me to not even bother to try. I wish my mother had known that having only one friend was not normal and might have signaled other problems. I wish my mother had known that leaving the house unzipped, buttoned wrong, or without my lunch or books was a signal. I wish my mother had known that I had a huge curiosity about life, but that I could not absorb it in the context of public school. I wish my mother had known that my artistic and creative skills were important and could have sustained me had I been encouraged to develop them. I wish my mother had known that I could not organize my room. I wish my mother had known what we know now. She didn't. She did her best, and I hope that she knows how very much I love her. Mary's poem can almost serve as an outline for this book. She details the behaviors that should have signaled to her parents and teachers that there were underlying problems. School phobia or avoidance. Low self-esteem. Low academic performance, despite high IQ and creativity. Poor organizational skills, messiness. Sleep problems. Shyness. Poor social skills. Disheveled appearance. Grooming problems. Withdrawal in the classroom. Mary describes the unwitting assumptions that allow both her parents and teachers to overlook and undervalue her talents and abilities, and she relates not only the causes, but suggests possible solutions that could have helped her to overcome her limitations. Recognition and understanding of her struggles. Positive attention and affection to offset daily assaults on her self-esteem. Affirmation and encouragement. Acknowledgement of her strengths. An ADHD-friendly learning environment. Appropriate stimulation and challenges. Assistance with structure and organization. Help with chronic sleep problems. Support to develop more assertiveness. Recognition of and support for social challenges. Our work is not yet done. Though the identification of girls with ADHD has progressed markedly, our work is not yet done. A recent study found that teachers continue to identify many more males than females, most likely because males are more disruptive in the classroom. However, even more troubling are the results of another study that found that teachers and parents were more likely to refer boys rather than girls with ADHD for services, even when they reportedly exhibited identical behaviors. Why is it that teachers can easily recognize boys with ADHD, but seem to overlook the differences between girls with ADHD and others? Perhaps it is because they have greater difficulty understanding that the feelings and behaviors typically seen in these girls are actually signs of ADHD. These signs include patterns such as hypertalkativeness, blurting out answers without raising one's hand, social withdrawal, a tendency to miss or misunderstand directions, arriving at school without necessary materials, messiness, disorganization, test anxiety, late or missing assignments, and forgetfulness. Even an intense, anxious hyperfocus on schoolwork may signal a girl with ADHD who is frantically attempting to compensate for her difficulties. Teachers are less likely to refer girls who forget their lunch money, lose their homework, or seem unmotivated in class, perhaps because the only ones to suffer from these behaviors are the girls themselves, but also because teachers are not aware that these patterns are typical of girls with ADHD. Mothers seem to be much more aware than teachers of the differences in their ADHD daughters' behaviors when compared to other girls. This finding highlights a major obstacle to diagnosing girls, since ADHD symptoms must negatively impact functioning and be reported in more than one setting. A mother may be very aware of her daughter's ADHD, but if the teacher doesn't recognize it, the diagnosis may not be made. And worse, the mother may be blamed for her reports of problems at home, since these behaviors are not being observed at school. The author's clinical experience is that girls try much harder to conform to their teacher's expectations, masking their ADHD struggles until later, when even their greatest efforts cannot overcome their ADHD challenges. Changes in the DSM-5 published in 2013, however, should contribute to improved identification of these girls with ADHD. New DSM-5 guidelines allow for a diagnosis of ADHD if symptoms emerge as late as age 12. Previously, the cutoff was age 7. This change will have a significant impact upon the diagnosis of girls, because there is evidence that girls' ADHD symptoms often emerge later. Use of self-report scales. In contrast to studies that only use scales completed by parents and teachers, and as a result, recognize ADHD in more boys than girls, studies that use self-report scales are part of the diagnostic process for ADHD, uncover nearly equal numbers of males and females. Self-report on the part of girls is critical, because for most girls, ADHD is an internalized disorder, that is, a disorder that impacts the individual in ways that may not be easily observed by others. The authors of this book have developed and recently revised a girl's ADHD self-report scale to allow girls the opportunity to describe their own experience as a girl with ADHD. This scale can be heard in the appendix at the back of this book. There are not yet standardized norms for this self-report scale, therefore it should not be used as a diagnostic tool. However, it can be very useful as a means of opening up a more detailed and comprehensive discussion with girls about how they are impacted by ADHD. Our evolving understanding of ADHD. Now that we are doing a much better job of identifying girls with ADHD, our primary focus turns to efforts to better understand girls, how they feel, why they do what they do, and how we can help them feel and function better. There is still so much that we don't know. How are girls with ADHD similar to boys with the disorder? How do they differ? Do they need different supports and treatment approaches? What is the outcome of ADHD in girls over time? In the past 15 years, there have been important developments in our still evolving understanding of ADHD. These developments are not specifically related to girls, but are highly relevant because these new ways of conceptualizing ADHD apply to girls as well as boys. Next, we briefly introduce these new conceptualizations of ADHD. ADHD is now considered to be a developmental disorder. Our more recent view of ADHD places emphasis upon impaired cognitive functions rather than upon hyperactivity, impulsivity, and distractibility. To reflect this new understanding, the DSM-5 classifies ADHD as a developmental disorder rather than as a behavior disorder of childhood, as it was classified earlier. Our focus has turned toward the impact of ADHD upon cognitive functions and away from our earlier emphasis upon hyperactivity, impulsivity, and disruptive behaviors. This shift will naturally lead to easier identification of girls who are less likely to be hyperactive, impulsive, and disruptive. ADHD, a focus on executive functions. Dr. Thomas Brown of Yale University was a very early leader in the shift to a focus on executive functions as the core issues of ADHD. In his research on highly intelligent students with ADHD, he found that while some of them were hyperactive and impulsive, All of them shared core executive function issues, as well as issues related to mood. He developed the Brown ADD scales, questionnaires that assess an individual's difficulties in areas such as getting started on a task, sustaining effort on a challenging task, becoming distracted.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?